Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, hi again, everyone. It's 1010 Win Sports Director Mark Renee, and this is a special podcast edition of On the Mark. You might call it a miracle edition, as we're here with Ron Swoboda celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 1969 Miracle Mets, and he's got a book out called Here's the Catch, a memoir of the Miracle Mets and more. Number four, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for reaching out. I'm happy to be here.
All right, so Here's the Catch obviously is a play on words with Here's the Pitch, but you obviously have the catch. Game four, 1969 against the Orioles. It was a 1-0 Mets lead at the time in the top of the ninth inning. Yep. Orioles against Tom Seaver have runners on the corners, first and third, and there's a sinking line drive hit to right field. What goes through Ron Swoboda's mind when he sees the ball coming toward him?
Yeah, I'm breaking hard to my right. One of the things I worked on with Eddie Yost, our third base coach, and a great guy with a fungo bat, he hit me thousands of ground balls, line drives, left and right, in front of me, over my head, and I really did try to make myself a better outfielder. I sure felt like I needed to, and maybe conventional wisdom hadn't caught up with the improvements I had made. But I got a good jump on a ball in a situation where I saw one line and only one line, and I took it and stayed it. And, you know, 95% of the way there, I wasn't too sure what was going to happen. I realized after three or four running strides, I'm going to have to lay out for this thing. Mm-hmm. And I laid out to my backhand, and it hit me square in the web about 2 inches before it finds grass.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it obviously allowed Frank Robinson to tag up and score and tie the game, but it kept the go-ahead run on first base.
Well, here's my question, because Boog Powell was the guy on first, not exactly the fleetest of foot, and it's funny because I was watching the replay this morning. Kurt Gowdy was doing the play-by-play with Lindsey Nelson, of course, who
yes.
you saw a lot
of. Pretty good
years.
Guys.
Fantastic. And Lindsey was the one who also said, well, he was not exactly the quickest guy in the world, but he probably would have scored. What do you think?
It's a guess. Now, here's what I think. You know, he's got to wait to see what happens with me.
Right.
He can't go roaring off, rounding second. He's got to wait and stop in his tracks to see what happens on my dive.
Right.
I catch it. He's got to go back. And even if it looks like I catch it,
yeah.
he's got to go back.
Right.
He's not sure. I think that pause might make it hard for him to score if Tommy Agee gets to it. And the other thing is, you don't know, there's a little middle ground between me catching it and never getting a glove on it.
Right.
I could knock it down. I could deflect it towards Agee.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned Tommy. Where was he on the play? Because you don't see him in the frame.
You do not.
Isn't he supposed to be backing up?
He might have been he might have been in left center field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he might have played Brooks Robinson around.
Sure.
So he would have a long run if the ball went clean through me to the fence, and that's a situation where Boog Powell might have scored.
Yeah.
But I like to think that he was still going to have to wait and see what happened, and maybe that would buy us a little bit of time if I didn't make the clean catch. But that, of course, is conjecture.
It's a much better story that you saved the game with that catch, right?
Well, you know, the pivotal game in the series, you know, that keeps us tied with them. We score in the bottom of the 10th and move 3-1 in front of the Orioles. If you lose that game and they tie it up and have that momentum going back to Baltimore,
right.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, it's just like you don't want to give those guys a life. That was a good team in Baltimore, and they were feeling like probably feeling like things were just working against them. And if they just get a few breaks, you know, they can turn things around. And that was entirely possible.
Now, Rod Gasper pulls a Joe Namath before the series and predicts the Mets are going to win. Very confidently, he predicts the Mets are going to win. He and I were joking over the weekend at Citi Field that Namath has gotten a lot more mileage out of his brash prediction than Rod Gasper ever did. But when did Ron Swoboda know that the Mets were going to win the series?
You know, I felt like at that point where we won that one, you know, that we it was ours to lose at that point. And that made, you know, that was a different feeling altogether than, hey, we're playing the Orioles and, you know, hey, if we lose, you know, hopefully we put up a good effort. You know, I didn't have this solid rock confidence that we're just going to go in here and blow these guys away. They're too good a team, and they had you know what happened in 1970. By the way, that Orioles team was going to win a World Series. You know, it just wasn't going to be against us.
All right, you dive in the book, no pun intended, into your family life. You've been married for over 50 years to your wife Cecilia.
Yep.
You grew up just outside of Baltimore, and long before the Washington Nationals came back, because you had the Senators for a time.
Yeah.
But you're from the area. There's no cable TV. If you're going to watch a game or listen to the game on the radio, it's going to be the Orioles. So how did it feel for Ron Swoboda to be playing in the World Series against the team he grew up rooting for?
So many circles were completed, you know, in that process. Me being a terrible outfielder and working at it and feeling like I got a little better, I completed that circle. The Mets losing 100 games for most of their early history, and now we hand the fans 100 wins and we're in a World Series. That circle gets completed. And then coming back to Baltimore to play this team that I had worked out with. I had worn their uniform as an amateur, taking batting practice and working out in the outfield and being around big leaguers, man. And, you know, and I remember the first time I walked in the clubhouse and Steve Barber, left-handed pitcher, smoking. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm a young kid. I'm like, smoking? You can't be smoking and be an athlete, can you? So I got to see the inside world. And of course, it's my hometown. And, you know, I'd seen a lot of Oriole games. And I saw Vic Wertz hit the only home run he hit for the Orioles in 1954.
How about that?
Before he gets traded to Cleveland, before he hits the ball that Willie Mays catches in the World Series, that is considered the best play ever in the World
Series. See, there's a circle for you, right? You get the Willie Mays catch and the Ron Swoboda catch.
Yet another, yes.
Very interesting. Did your college career start at NYU, or you went there after Maryland?
No, I went to the University of Maryland, and I played freshman ball at the University of Maryland. Okay. I signed after my first year with the Mets. They offered me $35,000, and you know, I wouldn't advise you to get between me and that piece of paper.
No, that was a lot of money at the time.
My mom and dad made about 12 and a half, 12.5 between them, both of them working their whole professional lives. So $35,000 was a lot of money. Huh. And you know, I was going to sign that piece of paper. And the other big sell was this. The Mets said, you know, we need players, and your chances getting to big leagues are a lot better with the New York Mets. So I bought all of that.
We're on the mark with Ron Swoboda, who's in town celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Miracle Mets. Your first manager in the major leagues, Casey Stengel, as you mentioned in the book, and I'm not going to give away too much from the book. We want everybody to buy it. You'll be doing an appearance tonight at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey. 6 o'clock, buy a book, get it signed. But Casey couldn't get your name right.
Oh, he never called me anything but Swoboda. You know, Swoboda is means freedom in Polish, and I'm proud of that. I kind of like that idea that it means freedom. I believe in that. But to Casey, I was Swoboda. That's what he said on opening day, 1965. Seventh inning, we're trailing the Dodgers in Shea Stadium, and I'm sitting there in a lark. You know, I got a great seat and big league game. I never been up for a big league at bat, and he finds me, you know, he's, Sabota, get a bat, you know, and you're like, Don Drysdale's pitching. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to say? You know, I'd really rather
you
not.
Sure you want me to hit?
You sure?
You want to send up a lefty?
No, man, you bounce up like you were born to be in that situation, even though your heart's beating so fast you think you're going to have an attack and you're shaking. You know, you feel like you're visibly shaking, and you walk into the batter's box and Don Drysdale throws you this fastball. And you, when you're nervous, you know, your vision constricts a little. Mm-hmm. He threw me a fastball I haven't seen yet. And, you know, strike one, you know, and all I could say was, sounded like a strike, you know, and then he throws me another one. I try to get a hack at it, and I'm a couple of beats behind, and the thought occurred to me that the good news is this doesn't seem like it's going to take very long. That's the good news. So he throws me a slider, and I hit a line drive to the second baseman, Jimmy LaFever, and it was like a miracle. It's like I'm out, and I loved it. It was the best out I ever made in the big leagues. It's like I just hit a line drive off of Don Drysdale.
Solid contact.
You can have the out. Yeah. I make my little right turn and go sit down feeling like, wow, I might be able to play this game.
Now, there are guys who have hit little pop-ups and little nothing foul balls off of Drysdale who are probably telling stories about the hot shot that they hit, but yours was a legit line drive.
I juiced it, you know, and it was like I could see it. That was the difference. It was a little slider, and I could see it. It helped.
Ron, you brought up Shea Stadium, and I'm wondering, for you personally, over this reunion celebration weekend, how much did you miss Shea? As nice as Citi Field is.
Yeah, Citi Field is architecturally magnificent. It's just huge and exciting food court where occasionally a baseball game breaks out. So it has all of the convenience and architecture you could want in a baseball stadium. It is incredible. Shea's architecture really was the fans. It didn't blow you away with art. It was like a big globe theater. It stood three tiers tall, and you know, and fans were in there. And you know, I talked about how it was a hard outfield to play because till you got used to that background,
right?
Balls never came out of the stands. Shea stood so tall, only the pop-ups would get up in the clear sky.
Right.
So that background with fans moving around was always sort of mercurial, you know, and it was changing with the atmospherics. And, you know, it was a tough read for outfielders. I saw guys take bad angles on balls because they weren't used to it and muffed them.
You had that, and you also had the tricolor seats. At every level was a different color seat, so how much more difficult did that make it?
You know, it's not so much the empty seats, it's when people are there and they're moving about.
Right,
and,
especially wearing white.
So things are always in transition, and you got to learn to read the ball against that, block that out. It takes a little doing.
Now, you mentioned Casey, when he was managing the Mets, about the same age that you are now. So I'm curious to know. I know you're working in minor league ball with the New Orleans Baby Cakes, and we'll get to them in just a sec. But did you ever, because you played for Casey, you played for Gil, managerial or coaching aspirations ever cross your mind?
You know, nobody considered me a student of the game, and nobody considered me one of the sharpest knives in the drawer, okay, as a player.
Yeah.
I had figured out a few things, and you know, but to call me a student of the game would have been a reach, and I knew that personally.
Okay.
You know, it was like, and I also don't think I would have been very good at telling the same guys the same stuff every day as a coach, and not seeing it get done. You know, I could have. You know, I like to talk to guys about what I think it was. You know, what I think they ought to do, what I think could help them as a player, because I think I've learned that in the 20 years I've spent with the coaches and managers at the AAA level.
Sure.
doing color commentary at the AAA level in New Orleans. I feel like I've learned a little more. I feel like I'm more of a student of the game now than I was then, and you know, I've always been a guy that's, you know, it might take me a while, but I can. I'm capable of learning. I'm a slow learner.
Well, and yet, you were able to parlay after your playing days, and you went from the Mets to the Expos for a brief time, and then with the Yankees, you wrapped up your career in 73. And then I wound up watching you on TV doing sports on Channel 2 for a time. So how did you parlay your playing career into a broadcasting career?
Somebody thought I could do it, and they hired me, and and I had no clue what to do. It was like walking out on the stage at Carnegie Hall, and they hand you a violin, and they tell you to play something.
Good luck.
You know, it's like, what? But I was the same way that I came to the big leagues after 1 year in the minor leagues, and here you are in the big leagues. And I did 9 years in the big leagues. And so, I did a lot of on-the-job training, and it's a little bumptious, you know. It's a little fractious. It's difficult, but you know what? When you're giving it good effort, you make mistakes, and you can live with that if you keep trying, if you keep working at it. And I did it in both situations, and ended up doing 20 years of local sports. You're writing your own copy. And then for about 10 years, I wrote a monthly column for New Orleans Magazine on things New Orleans. So here you are, becoming a writer without thinking about becoming a writer, and you're doing this stuff, and, you know, that leads to a book that you can write. You know, I read good stuff. I'm a hard reader of good literature.
Begs the question, which was more difficult the first time, hitting Drysdale or reading off a teleprompter?
I was pretty nervous. It didn't feel really comfortable when I first started doing it. Mm-hmm. And I would have worked more at home, sort of cold reading stuff.
Okay.
Just because the mechanics of that would have helped me, visually. That was a mistake I made.
Yeah.
But there wasn't almost like when you went to the big leagues, there wasn't a lot of hitting coaches, you know. There weren't a lot of coaches in doing, you know, when you first start on TV, because most of the people who get there know how to do it. In our time with the New York Mets, you know, Yogi Berra was a wonderful guy, wonderful player,
yeah.
But his idea of hitting was, see it and hit it.
Right.
You know, it's like, yeah,
I can't teach that.
He'd say, if you can't hit it, don't swing at it. And you're like, well, what about two strikes, Yogi? And he'd go, well, then you might have to swing at it. And you're like, huh, glad you cleared that up. But I mean, you know, I'm making a joke, but Yogi was not a hitting coach.
Right.
And there weren't a lot of hitting coaches around then.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of figure it out for yourself. Cleon Jones looked at the little film loops they had for us, of us hitting, and he worked. He figured it out in a way that that I never did as a player. I probably know more about it now because I've hung around the AAA level and watched the hitting coaches work with these guys and watched the pitching coaches work with these guys.
All right, I want to get back to the Baby Cakes. Marlins affiliate.
Yes.
One of the guys on your team this year, Peter O'Brien, who played for the Marlins last year, and I know how much you love degrees of separation.
I love Peter O'Brien.
He was the guy, though, who, playing first base for the Marlins last year, made the catch in foul territory that ended David Wright's career.
Yes,
he did. When everybody wanted him to drop the ball and prolong the at-bat.
Yeah.
In a meaningless game.
Peter was perfectly capable of dropping that play.
Right, but why didn't he?
First base was not his long suit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what's going to happen. Everybody tries to make every play they can make.
Right.
I can tell you of a play I made one time in Montreal when I was playing for the Mets before I went over to Montreal.
Okay.
And Rusty Staub, a guy who became a great friend of mine and played for the Mets and did well for them, 1973 World Series and all of that, and was a great player. I'm in right field. The winning run is on third base in the bottom of the ninth inning. Staub hits a fly ball right down the right field line, and I go over, and the smart play here with less than two outs is to straddle the line, and if the ball is on the other side of the line, you let it drop,
right,
because it was deep enough that I couldn't throw the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
So I do this, and I'm feeling really brilliant, you know. I'm like, this is really special. And I get out, I just barely get down with my hands on my knees in my position in right field, and Staub hits the next one over the right field fence into a swimming pool behind the fence in Park Jerry.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, that's about as long as my brilliance would last under most circumstances.
Oh, my goodness. Up until a couple of weeks ago, you had the Mets rookie record for the most home runs before an All-Star break, 15. The All-Star break is still a week away, And young Peter Alonso has nearly doubled your output for the first half of the season.
Well, I will say right out from the get-go, in AAA, we're using the same baseballs, and those things are flying.
Yeah.
Okay, they're alive.
They're like
how alive are they? I told somebody, you just shake the box and they'll let themselves out. You know, it's like these are lively baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter O'Brien also is strong and has a really good approach up there. He gets good hacks most of the time.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty good idea of the strike zone. You know, two strikes, you can get him to chase, but you got to make a pretty good pitch on him and you got to take something off it usually. Peter O'Brien is ready to hack, and I got to meet him in spring training, and we talked a little bit about his approach.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down to get the, as good a pitch as you can get and put as good a swing on it as you can put.
Your nickname came about long before the movie. How'd you get Rocky?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of Rockies in baseball. Rocky Colavito.
Right.
Rocky, I was trying to think of the catcher, Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
They called Bob Johnson, who was on the Mets at one time, Rocky. You know,
right.
It's usually not a compliment. It usually means you're kind of hard-headed.
Really?
Which I am. And I plead guilty to that charge. That's what it was about.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a backhanded compliment.
I didn't look easy to... impress. You know, thoughts kind of bounced off my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's where the Rocky thing came in.
And yet,
honestly,
you were a quick learner.
I'm not a quick learner. I'm a slow learner. Honestly,
really?
I'm a slow reader. But I'm educable. I'm coachable.
Yeah.
It just takes a while.
Fungible, I think, is a word they like to use. Right?
Money and dollar bills are fungible. I don't know about me, but I'm a guy that likes to learn things. I still have what I consider a fairly active curiosity. It takes me a while to absorb and assimilate new
mm-hmm.
stuff, but once I get it, I get it. And I've worked hard to continue to do it, and I've lasted 75 years. So I have a variety of interests. I read good stuff and enjoy reading it. And it's something I've always enjoyed in my life. I read better stuff now than I ever have.
Mm-hmm. How much did this past weekend mean to you to be able to be there?
Yeah, man. The Mets did it right. They threw a party for the 50th celebration of the 1969 Mets, and people turned out. You know, it was amazing. Something that you did 50 years later. Milestones obviously are important to people. It's how we book our lives, you know, and this 50-year deal was special back then, but it's grown a little, I think, in the minds of people who were around then, that it actually meant something in their lives. And that's a wonderful thing as a player, to know that you were a part of this thing that people, it inscribes their life, you know. It's just a moment in their life that and the Mets, you know, had us out there and had us together and had a wonderful video piece looking back at the old days and the stuff. That stuff is wonderful to watch. And being around the guys that you don't see very much, J.C. Martin and Rod Gasper and Jim McAndrew, and, you know, people that you get to spend a little time with, Jack DeLauro and stuff, Bobby File.
Right.
So those are the guys you don't see much of. And we're pretty darn sure, you know, a lot of those guys, you may not see them again.
Right.
You know,
sadly.
This is the 50th, come the 75th. My ashes are going to be up on a piece of property in Maryland if my sons do what they're told.
Yeah.
That's where I want to go.
Okay. Well, we'll hope that doesn't happen until after the
75th. I can wait.
Yeah, don't be in such a hurry. Who's the one guy that you were happiest to see?
Ed Cranepool.
Because of? Because
he got a new kidney,
situation,
and it's a perfect match, and Eddie's got a new lease on life, which to me, honestly, is more of a miracle than 69. That's a very, you know, and the team was very helpful in getting the story out so that he could get a match, because he couldn't go wait in line. At 75, you can't just wait in line. They're not going to give you a kidney under normal circumstances. Somebody has to dedicate it to you.
Yeah.
And somebody did, and they were able to make it work. And it was the perfect match for him. So Eddie's feeling stronger every day. And
he looked great. He sounded great.
I'm telling you, he gave a great speech, did he not? I mean, that was, he, you know, talking about touching all the bases. I love the way he brought it home, too. He talked about us and the stuff that we know and how we feel about one another and
right.
and that time back in 69. But he brought it right up to now, and that team is standing there. The current Mets are standing there on the top step. And he said, you guys just keep, you just remember, this year isn't over. And you can change things for the better.
Yeah, miracles
and
happen.
I believe that, you know. I believe that. They can do that. You know, it's doable. In today's game, things can change quickly.
Well, I appreciate you helping me tie everything together because you mentioned Eddie, and I was going to ask you if you had a chance to address the team, 2019 edition, what would you tell them about getting back in this race?
I would, you know, I think they know where, you know, that's what a baseball season does. When you play every day, you start seeing where the broken pieces are. And, you know, in today's game where middle relief is so important, getting it to the closer, they're struggling in that department. Right. And they're getting some runs. And this looks like a team that's starting to score some runs and getting an offense that sort of works. And the offense wins it last night. But you need those guys. They've blown a lot of saves, which to me says you got a lot of leads. But you got to make them hold up. And middle relief does that for you. And, you know, when you need six outs, you can't get five outs, right. as Seth Lugo, you know, knew from the other night.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple of tough ones. I follow this team, and I care about them. I think they got some great players there. I met Alonzo in the spring. I met Jeff McNeil.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, you know, Jake DeGrom is the best. And you know, I know this, you know, who would have thought that Jason Vargas would be one of the most effective starting
pitchers
in the spring.
The book is called Here's the Catch. It's a memoir of the Miracle Mets and more. The author is Ron Swoboda. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but if there's one thing you want people to take away from this book, what would it be?
Well, it is, you know, that miracle and more. My wife came up with the title, Here's the Catch, because it suggests that there might be a little bit
right.
more, you know,
mm-hmm.
more to the story.
Yeah.
My growing up, crazy uncles that worked in the morgue. I had a wonderful, idyllic growing up. And I try to let people in on the emotions of what it was like to you know, the ebb and flow of my success that year. I started out doing nothing and luckily came around enough because Hodges played the hot hand, and I was not the hot hand
right.
for a lot of that season.
Right.
It came around at the end and the World Series ended up being pretty good, but I'm just an average guy who you know, did the work every day, and I think I'm happy with that, you know. I don't resent superstars or impact players. I was the player I could be, and that's what I worked at, and that's good enough for a lot of people. I felt blessed to be that.
And you guys really were the embodiment of the word team.
We did. And the other thing, keep in mind, Mark, you know, it unless you win it all, all those little things, all those little contributions, they don't all matter
right.
unless you win it all.
Well, we certainly wouldn't be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the National League champions, I can tell you that.
Yep.
This is Ron Swoboda. He'll be appearing at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey at 6 o'clock if we can get him out of here on time.
Perfect.
The name of the book, again, is Here's the Catch, a memoir of the Miracle Mets and more. I'm Mark Erne. This is my favorite number 4, and the reason I wear number 4 when I can. He's Miracle Met right fielder Ron Swoboda, and you're on the mark.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.